Tonight, Edward Norton on Borrowed Time in 25th Hour.
Maternal manipulation from murderous mom Michelle Pfeiffer in White Oleander.
And the Rev Head sets contribution to the energy crisis in Too Fast, Too Furious.
Good evening.
Hi.
And Kaya Wanju, hello. Welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. For decades, David Stratton and Margaret Pomeranz were Australian film reviewing royalty, and they still are. Having built up a loyal following with their weekly show on SBS, The Movie Show. The 90s and early 2000s was the peak of David and Margaret's influence over Australian audiences. What they recommended, people would head out and go and see. I remember they both gave Rogue Thornton's Samson and Delilah a emphatic 5-star rating, which encouraged people to head out and go and see it and became a little bit of a box office darling, which is wonderful. Both David and Margaret are staunch supporters of cinema, becoming advocates for all kinds of cinema and decrying the impacts of censorship. While both have played roles in the way that film censorship in Australia has impacted what we see, it's Margaret's role with the notorious Larry Clark film, Ken Park, which saw her make headlines after she put on an illegal, in inverted commas, screening of the film after it received a refused classification status in Australia, aka the film being banned from screening in Australia at all. That pivotal moment of Australian film criticism history is what sits at the heart of Zachary Ryan and Alexei Toliopoulos' comedy show Refused Classification, which is currently making its way around Australian comedy festivals, having recently played at the Adelaide Fringe Festival, and with shows to come in Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne and Perth. The show sees Zachary don a salt and pepper wig as David, while Alexei somehow manages to imbue himself with the spirit of Margaret Pomeranz with her trademark golden locks. Together, they retell this point in Aussie cinema history through the form of a comedy show slash documentary slash verbatim thinner theatre. In the following interview, Zachary and Alexei talk about how the show came about, their experiences watching Ken Park, and how Simon Morado's brilliant Book of the Band helped inform the show. And finally, Alexei goes deep on his personal connection with the At the Movies board game. I should add, too, that if you're interested in reading the transcripts of David and Margaret's work on both The Movie Show and At the Movies, then check out the Letterboxd account, which is Margaret_David. I'll stick a link in the show notes. And that has logged all of their work over the years, not just the stuff that they've done on At the Movies, but also on The Movie Show. Additionally, if you are looking for that nostalgic kick, then SBS On Demand has you sorted where most of the episodes of The Movie Show can be watched. Highly recommend delving into that. I just watched the episode, which you would have heard at the beginning, where they review Too Fast, Too Furious, and then they close out the show talking about Ken Park. It's a wild thing. I had no recollection that Bulletproof Monk was a film, that Chow Yun-Fat was in a movie with Stifler from American Pie. That is what the early 2000s was about. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Anyway, before I go down a bit of a rabbit hole there, I want to make sure that you know that you can keep track of where the show is playing in your local cities by following Zachary and Alexei separately on Instagram. I will stick a link to their profiles in the show notes below as well. And if you want to find out more about the work that we do on The Curb, then please head over to thecurb.com.au. We are a completely independent ad-free website that lives on in the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. If you can and you have the means to support us, please visit patreon.com/thecurbau to support our work from as little as $1 a month. Right, it's enough of me. On to the chat with Zachary and Alexei about their comedy show, Refused Classification.
How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. We're having a lot of fun, so
that's good.
No rest for us at the moment, which is good.
Yeah, as it should be. I mean, it's exciting to see what you've got coming up, literally going and taking David and Margaret around Australia. Not just David and Margaret, but also Ken Park as well, which I don't think that most of Australia is going to have an understanding of what Ken Park actually is. But
yeah, hopefully change the hearts and minds. They'll know what Ken Park is by the end of this.
There's some very detailed descriptions of the film in the show. So,
do you go into like the whole like Carradine kind of self-pleasure stuff in it? Spoil stuff. Yeah, okay, right.
Won't spoil it, but we go into a very, 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 very detailed description of that and many other scenes. Mm. And it's, in my opinion, the best moment in the whole show.
We didn't even write it. That's written by the classification board. So it's...
which is, like... I have to say, I mean, Alexa, you know me being as much of a nerd about Australian film and Australian history and stuff like that. Getting to hear that you both were doing something specifically about this kind of moment in Australian history, it's just phenomenal. So I guess, you know, I'd love to know about the decision point behind choosing to do David and Margaret and then specifically doing something around this specific moment in Australian history.
I guess it kind of happened really naturally because Zach and I were hanging out. I think we were doing a podcast and we started talking about Margaret and David. And I had just rewatched this episode of the SBS, the movie show, because it was playing on repeats on TV at the time. And I remembered almost instantly this episode because it was one where they had like all these reviews, like they reviewed 25th Hour, which David liked and Margaret didn't, and a few other movies that I remembered. But then they got to this moment where they reviewed Too Fast, Too Furious.
Oh, yeah. She gave it like 4.5 stars, didn't she?
She gave a very, very vivid 4.5 star review. And that was something I never forgot from seeing it on TV as a kid. And it just like all kind of came back to me. And then immediately after that, they in real time start talking about the Ken Park fiasco. It's just been basically banned from Sydney Film Festival. It looks like it's not going to screen there. And they call out the government. They put like a word out to get faxes sent into the movie show so they can forward them on to the Premier and the Governor General. And it just kind of all struck me. I'm like, oh, wow, I forgot entirely about the Ken Park fiasco. So we started talking about it. And then very quickly, Zach like messaged me a day later.
Well, I was just, I looked it up the other day, actually, because I was curious exactly how it started. And that's the great thing about the internet now is a lot of these conversations are recorded. And it was I always thought I said we should, but the question was, has there ever been a documentary made about this? Because it seems like such a pivotal moment in history. Then we just got talking about it, and then Alexi immediately came back with, well, why do a documentary when you can do a dramatized version? And then I think a few weeks later, Alexi was like, let's do it as a live show. And then the next day I was like, well, let's do it as a live show in like 3 weeks. And he was like, all right. It was just a real escalation. And it was a great moment. It was a real, really fun thing of like, it's a story, like we both grew up watching Margaret and David, and I know a lot of people did, and it was one of those things where we knew the story was interesting, we knew the story was relevant, and then it's just been a process of uncovering that through research, finding out, all right, how can we convey that to a general audience? And I think we've really found it. It's one of those shows where I think the film nerds are loving it, but it's been really touching when people have come along and not known about this piece of history and equally responded to it. So, yeah, it's been really fun.
Well, I mean, there's a huge amount of affection for David and Margaret, and, you know, their impact and their lasting legacy is unparalleled. Like, we haven't had any kind of person replace who they are in a public consciousness in Australia. So getting to see them embracing this way is it's a beautiful thing, even though, you know, hate to say, obviously you both don't really look like them, but that's okay.
I'll have to reject that because, Andrew, there's a certain thing that happens to me when I put on the wig and I put on my little necklace, my dinosaur designs necklace, and I look in the mirror and I just go, she's here. I have like the full delusional fantasy where I go, I look like Margaret Pomeranz.
I will say, like, I did look at the images of you both dressed up as them, and then I heard you doing a podcast where you put on the Margaret voice, and I've talked to her in person in a cloud of smoke before, and I was like, I've been transported back to that moment, so...
Just imagine if Margaret was a Greek man with a voice three octaves deeper. Yeah, right there.
You close your eyes and you're just there. It's like the movie show's back on. Yeah.
And also, David, I had this realization that David has the most impossible accent to do ever. Mm. I've kind of just given up, but I always thought he was well-spoken, just a well-spoken guy. But then when I did that, I sound like David Marr, who is funnily a part of this story as well. But I don't do a David Marr impression specifically because it throws my David impression. So he's not a character.
He's not a character. We say his name twice, like, and that's it.
I think there was a quote from David Marr. I was like, I can't do him because he's so close to David. But what I've realized is David is not a well-spoken Australian. He's got an Australian accent with just like these like little occasional Britishisms. It's just this really strange accent. But, you know, luckily I look nothing like him or sound nothing like him, so we just embrace it.
I have to do the full transformation 5 or 6 times throughout the show.
Well, it works. I mean, I'm excited to see what it's going to be like on stage. Was it always the decision point that you would be playing David and you'll be playing Margaret?
I have to say, I have this theory. The reason it kind of came up on the podcast, the reason we talked about Margaret and David in the first place is I have a podcast with my friend Mish where we were developing a theory, which is that who the Margaret is and who the David is in any duo is relative. Like, you can be the David in one duo and the Margaret in another duo.
Yeah.
And I'm often the Margaret, right? And I would say even out of us as people, I'm the Margaret. Mm. It was just one of those things where I could just see in Alexi's eyes that he needed this. Mm. He needed Margaret. And I was like, you know what, Alexi, go for it. I'm going to go figure out how the fuck this man talks. Mm.
I also think there was a part of it where we're both tall, but Zach is like 1 inch taller than me, so it's easier for me to become a little bit smaller next to him.
And then the flip is, because Margaret's such a big character through this, I get to play everyone else. So I have gone to way too much effort to do impressions of people that hardly, nearly everyone in the audience doesn't know. So I've nailed my Larry Clark. I've nailed my former head of the OFLC, Maureen Shelley. Like, I've really fucking nailed these impressions for no one. Like,
well, they're for me. I like seeing them being nailed so much.
I'm really proud of my Maureen Shelley.
But we do have a fantasy of, like, the Broadway version of this show is... like that Frankenstein that Danny Boyle did where Benedict Cumberbatch Johnny Lee Miller swap roles every night as Frankenstein and the monster. Like, that's the dream. We'd love to do that.
If we ever do that, we want the description of the plot to be, you know, we describe the plot and then this really fancy description of, like, the roles of Margaret and David will alternate each night. Like that Danny Boyle production of Frankenstein.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, I have to say, like, you kind of, when you come to Perth, you'll be in the homeland of people who embrace Maureen Shelley and, you know, Larry Clark and all of that, because Simon Morado wrote a book all about it, right? Which you might have used as kind of a research thing.
Oh, yeah.
He talks about Maureen Shelley in there. And so, you know, we're both... like, you have two people very excited in Perth, at least. So that's good. Yeah. It's half of Perth.
Yeah, Simon was quite, because we read Simon's book, especially that chapter, and then we hung out with him to chat. And I think he was like quite key in it, helping us figure out why, like, or at least how to kind of describe why it's important today.
Yeah, that was a big thing, because I think as we were doing the research and developing the story, the question that kept coming up whenever we told people about it, they were saying, you know, how is it relevant today? The censorship board, the classification board, doesn't really have power anymore. Netflix has moved towards an automated system of classification. So we were constantly kind of looking for that. And that's a sort of a reveal in the show. So I don't want to give away too much, but Yeah, Simon's answer and talking to him about Fred Nile and these sorts of figures really, really helped us unlock what about this is relevant today. And it does feel very relevant today.
Yeah, felt like a eureka moment talking to Simon, to be honest. Yeah, it was really, like, just really good, thoughtful stuff. And just, you know, he's definitely like a comrade in arms in, like, this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, and the way that he tracks it all is just, and the changes, of course, as you're saying, you go into it and stuff. Do you do a Fred Nile impression? I need to know.
Yeah, I do one. I do one, and I turn it up to about 117%. Like, yeah, it's insane.
It's it scares me every night because I don't know if, like, it's gone beyond Fred Nile. Like, Zach plays him like a Universal Monsters character from the 1940s.
Yeah. Well, that works. You know, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. He loved it.
Yeah, it's really scary to me.
Oh, well, look, I mean, comedy, fear, documentary, you're playing with all the genres there. I want to talk specifically about Ken Park for a moment. Did you both revisit the film in preparation for this?
Well, I it was funny. It was, we had talked about, I'd never seen the film, and then we had talked about that, and I, you know, I'd obviously known about the controversy and everything, and then we talked about it on the podcast, and then it came up that there was a still illegal screening of it in Melbourne, so I won't name drop the group that screened it, and it was funny because they couldn't advertise it, but it was just a week after we talked about it that I saw this Instagram post of like, and a secret screening of a early 2000s American indie film. And I'm like, well, it's clearly going to be that. And what I found interesting about it is, for me, I think Kids is an incredibly powerful film, but for me, it didn't quite click. It doesn't quite work. And I think that's a really interesting aspect of the story, in my opinion, is that often these battles aren't about the best of the art. They're about work that might not be the most defendable thing or might not have the most artistic merit. And I think that's a really interesting aspect to the story. That kind of, if anything, I think if I'd loved the film, I would have been less interested in the story. I think it's so much more interesting when it's not the director's best work in a lot of ways.
And for me, I had never seen it growing up or anything because it was hard to find and hard to see. But I didn't watch until we were well into writing this show, like probably just before we had a completed first draft or before we had done any of the trial shows was when I watched it, because I was like, oh, I'll save it just in case. And then it's my favorite Larry Clark film now. I'm not a big Larry Clark guy. I don't particularly love Kids. I like Bully quite a bit too, but I don't know, Ken Park, I actually think I would have been like one of the gloomy teenagers that Margaret was fighting for to be able to see this kind of movie, because I did feel some of that resonance in its like bleakness. It goes a bit further than I would personally desire to want to see in a movie, but the bits that feel emotionally true really like quite struck me. I think it's a beautiful film. I'm surprised by my own opinion on it.
It's. I think the interesting thing as well is it's hard to describe. If I were to say where my criticisms fall, it's hard to describe it in a way that captures what it is, which is, in this day and age, I grew up with the internet, you know, I grew up with the forums, and I grew up with, so I've seen...
Well, you're an original YouTuber.
Yeah. I've seen... You know, we've all seen the most horrific shit. Like, our generation has seen the most horrific shit up next to stuff that makes sense, stuff that doesn't make sense. We're used to a barrage of upsetting content. And I often think, you know, I don't find a film like this provocative per se. I don't find a film like this upsetting. So then when I'm watching and I'm looking for what's behind it, for me, Kids had something behind it. It feels like it's there to be provocative, but it also feels like there's something behind it. Maybe I'm reading into it, maybe it doesn't. Whereas this film, I think there's a lot of power to it. There's a lot of beautiful imagery, but there's an element where, because it's not provoking me, it just feels like provocation with no end goal. It's like, okay, great, awesome, man, good for you.
Yeah. Well, that's how I feel about it. And it's certainly, not to make this about me for a moment, but it's something I've not really talked about all that much in my film writing stuff. But way back in the early 2000s, the movie show had a forum, talking about forums, and I was quite ridiculously active on there, obscenely active on there, actually, to the point where when this took place, the whole Ken Park thing, somebody in Sydney had it on VCD and sent that copy around to the members on there in Australia. And so I've still got, I was the last person and I was a bit of a dickhead and I didn't send it on. And so I've got it somewhere in the house here. But yeah, that was it. And so, and then when it shifted over to At the Movies, the SBS kind of just neglected the forums and then it disappeared, which was kind of a sad part of very, very minor Australian film history. But
oh my God, imagine you didn't tell us that, Andrew. That's the best thing that will happen to us today is hearing that.
Yeah, it was a terrifying place, the movie show forums, but nonetheless.
Oh, I can imagine. It was beyond the Wild West, the early internet. Yeah. And those forums were rough, man.
Oh, they really were. And, like, we didn't even have images or anything. There was no profile pictures, so it was literally just down and dirty, just text, right? And that's it. No even, private messaging. So you could publish your address online and nobody would send you nonsense. Anyway, when, again, coming to hear this, I'm like, oh, this is like, I'm getting all these early 2000s flashbacks from movie show forums and stuff. But it's the power of two people, right? David and Margaret. And to bring it back to that is vitally important. And that's a lot of the reason why we do what we do. But it's so exciting that, decades later, this kind of story is living on. So thank you both for bringing it to life in this very, very different kind of forum that maybe would be expected.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to reawaken the love of film. And also to fight for your freaking rights to party and watch cool movies.
That's what you want, brother.
Yes, art house rocks.
It's funny, like, the thing is when you've only got an hour to tell a story like we do with a festival show, the amount you have to leave on the floor or on the cutting floor is really sad because, we've had to really focus in on one aspect of the story. But I know a huge part of it for us was not just the value of criticism and the value of curation, but also, like, I think what we really miss now is when you know the critic's taste. I think we've talked about that so much that when, not only do you know Margaret's taste and you know David's taste, you know where their taste differs. So to watch them review a film and then disagree on a film, they might both give a film a bad score, but there was a time then where now a bad score means, oh, it's a bad movie. Then you go, well, I know my taste differs from this person in that way, so I might still like it. Like, that quality to knowing a reviewer's taste is really missing now. And maybe it's kind of coming back a bit with Letterboxd and stuff like that, but it's that's something that I think is really special, that idea of knowing who they are and so that's a shame we didn't get to explore that as much in the show, but there's still lots in it for
now. Yeah, you can always do a sequel of, like, David and the interactions with Romper Stomper and stuff like that, getting a glass of wine thrown in him. There's so many different stories. Yeah.
Isn't there? And it's I think that's the thing, that there's these layers of discovery, and the young people that don't even know who Margaret and David are, we're telling them about them. But also there's a lot of people that know them as these sort of dry reviewers on TV.
Yeah.
But exposing them to the notion of how important they were to the culture and how important, I don't know, I think it's a really interesting and cool story to tell.
And kind of for us, like, even within this one story, taking a step back and exploring, like, how actually important David Stratton himself was just to culture existing in Australia, and not just in how it even comes to Australia. Like, it's been really fun doing that because it becomes a reveal for people as they're even watching the show as well.
And that thing that you kind of go, you watch, an episode of the show, and you see their differences, you see how different they are, because they are such different people. But often you forget that really in so many ways they're more alike than they are different. They're really only different when it comes to taste, maybe, and approach, but they're both like these firecrackers. They're both these people that are really passionate about film. Because I think as well, this isn't even something I've thought about, but you know, since the mid-2000s and internet culture, the idea of criticism as shitting on things and talking about how bad it is and why it's bad, and that idea of the critic as someone who celebrates film and celebrates cinema is really beautiful and cool. And I think that's something that I, maybe we don't talk about directly, but that's in the show as well, this idea that they're a part of the conversation and they're elevating it. And they might not like a film, but that doesn't mean they don't love cinema full stop.
I think that's for us, for Zach and I, the way that we talk about film, that's like the intrinsic DNA that kind of, for me, at least speaking for myself, I think is what carries down from Margaret and David to me. It's like, that's, I care about film. I love film. I want to infect people with my love of film. I want it to be contagious. And that actually sounded disgusting when I said it that way, but please flourish it up on me. And kind of even thinking about their two different approaches and having talked to Margaret and David about this, it's so interesting, like, that David has like this approach of like, when it comes to anti-censorship, of like really going through the means and government applying pressure through that way. And then Margaret has like a more anarchic protest approach. And I think you need both of those kinds of people to affect change. And it's so cool that to be able to do a play where we go, hey, we've got these two exact people that were on TV for like 30 plus years doing this. It works so nicely for us to be able to tell a story about these two different kinds of protests in a very neat and funny way.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, what you do, Alexi, with, you know, talking with filmmakers and stuff, it feels like a direct continuation of, you know, the movie show and At the Movies. It's just a new generation of celebrating and championing films. You're not giving it a star rating or anything, but you're saying, hey, don't forget that this exists. And that is like so valuable, because as you're both saying, like, the shitting on film thing is a genuine thing, but we don't praise it enough. And we don't say, don't forget about this small film. Don't forget about this big film that you all forgot about. And what you do on the last video store is like so phenomenal, because you're cutting through in a way that gets people interested and excited. Not to kind of like put the spotlight too much on you, but it's like, how much do you consider yourself as a continuation of David and Margaret that way?
Oh my God. Wow. That, by the way, Andrew, from you, that's very, very meaningful and flattering. So allow me to emotionally suppress myself to then give you an answer. That's very nice of you. Well, I like to think of myself as like, definitely, like, I do think of them as like my heroes and my ancestors as well. And I think because of the way that I talk about film, I feel really duty bound to continue it, because like you said, there's not many people doing it that way. Not many people in like that celebratory space. I would consider you a peer in that way. I think like the way that you champion Australian film is something I really, really admire, and something that I strive to do as well. Because I think we, like, in Australia, we make such good films. There's not always ways to refine about them. And to not, like, to, for people to not even hear about Memoir of a Snail or Inside or something, like these movies that are really powerful and will deeply resonate with you because they're telling you your life experience as well in some way, something you understand. I think it's essential to, you know, a great country should have like a flourishing art scene, and a great country should have art that reflects their life back to them. And we really freaking do, but people aren't finding it, like it's not getting to them. So I feel really duty bound for that. And also on that, we have the editor of Birdeater did all our AV stuff for this show, because I was just like, I'm friends with him. We went to school together and we're just like, yeah, can you do this?
I messaged Alexi and I was just like, we were looking for an editor for our trailer. And I was like, I know he like does feature films. And I know that his feature film just won an actor award. But do you reckon he'd do a 1 minute vertical trailer for our comedy festival show? Like, she was like, you can ask.
And then he ended up doing like an insane job making so much like beautiful
we
imagery
just keep
for
apologizing
this show.
To God, him. We're so just like, sorry,
sorry,
thank
sorry,
you,
sorry, Ben. Sorry, Ben. Sorry,
thank
Ben.
You.
But you know, that's it. Like, that's kind of it. Like, I think that I just really want people to find a love of Australian film. And for me, that access point was Margaret and David. So all I can really do is like look up to them to continue that.
That's a beautiful way to kind of wrap up. Thank you, Alexi, for the kind words as well. It does mean a lot because, yeah, we make great films here, and just trying to get people, like, besides dragging them into the cinema themselves and go and watch this fucking film about hummingbirds, right? Like, like, just to do that is really hard, but then they'll go and see anything else, and that's fine, you know, but I'll put my soapbox away.
The secret is just tell them they love it in America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's really well in America.
Yeah, I hear they love it in you know, Eastern Europe or something like that as well. Europe seems to be a place they like.
Other country likes it.
That's it. We just have splinter cells over in other countries. Just go, yeah, spread the word, and we can bring it back to Australia. Bring it back.
But thank you so much both for your time. I guess one last thing I want to mention. I don't know where it is, but the board game, the At the Movies board game, right?
Yeah.
I commented on one of the posts saying, oh, you know, when you're in Perth, I need to get you to sign it. But it was more just a joke. And then there was somebody else replied going, yeah, I've got to do that in Brisbane too. And it's like, I guess it's like a really meta thing, knowing that they had all of these things, like a board game, they had a DVD virtual game as well, which is like absurd, right? No film critic, I don't even know if Roger Ebert had that kind of stuff. But anyway, what does it mean to have people, not just me, but other people go, oh, I would love for your signature on their stuff?
I think it's so funny. Like, that's because I have all those things too. I have... I know, and this is revealing more about me than I care to admit, but as a child of divorce, I have two copies of the board game that was at each parent's house growing up, which is how much I love that, like, they playing that game, love them. And I had a copy of the DVD as well, couldn't find it, I've got no idea where it was, so I bought one recently on eBay. I was like, thank God someone put it up there.
Yeah.
And I replayed it by myself. Like, I just, like, I spent an afternoon, my partner was out of the house, I just put it on and I just started playing along, and I thought it was great. It's so fun. I host, like, movie trivia quite regularly, and if I ever need a fill-in host, I might just put the DVD on in the cinema and then just take the weekend off.
Why not? I mean, that's perfect. It is a good disc as well. Like, it's not a bad thing. Like, there's some good questions in there.
Nice. There's real good questions in there. I've ripped some of them off. I'll say that on the record now. I ripped some of them off.
I know, you don't have to.
I'm admitting it.
It's an homage. It's an homage. Yeah, that's it.
It's an homage.
Look, Alexi, Zachary, it's been wonderful to be able to talk with you both. I'm looking forward to seeing the film, not the film, seeing the theatre part when it comes to Perth. Looking forward to that. And enjoy traveling
around
Australia.
Thank you for believing in us that it will become a film one day.
Yeah,
we're trying. Thank you for believing in us.
No, well, just like that event with Ken Park, somebody's going to be in the back filming it and putting it on some kind of dodgy Daily Motion or something like that, some dodgy Russian video thing, you know. So you'll live on. In 20 years' time, somebody will be like, there was this stage show about these strange film critics and, you know, they do their own. It's a snowball. Anyway, I'm going on. Thank you again so much for your time. It's been a delight. Yeah.
Oh, you're the best, Andrew. Thank you so much. Great to hang out, man.
Thanks for listening to this chat with Zachary Rowan and Alexi Toliopoulos for their show, Refuse Classification. For other interviews and to read reviews as well, visit thecurb.com.au. Usually I would say see you on the next one, but instead I'm going to leave you with the conversation that took place on the movie show with David and Margaret regarding the banning of Ken Park. Censorship is still something that takes place in Australia. It is just a little bit more hidden. And one final plug as well for Simon Morado's book, Book of the Band. Visit simonmorado.com. I'll stick a link in the show notes there. Highly recommend picking up that book and giving it a read. It is a really vital glimpse into how censorship took place in Australia and how it continues to take place in Australia.
Pretty spectacular. Too Fast, Too Furious opens nationally tomorrow. Well, now to something serious. The issue of the film Ken Park continues to dog the Sydney Film Festival and has possibly implications for the Melbourne Festival as well. The situation at the moment is that despite the film being refused classification for sale or hire, the New South Wales state government has the power to ask the director of the OFLC, Des Clark, to exempt the film for screening at the festival. It just requires the Premier, Bob Carr, and or Attorney General, Bob Debus, to take action. The film has screened at numerous festivals around the world, in Venice, where David and I saw it, and even in New Zealand, the film is being classified for educational and festival screenings. Ken Park does not portray underage sex. All the performers were 18 or over. It is a sad, bleak portrayal of teenage lives in California. But this is a democracy. You may disagree with my passion for civil liberties, for cultural freedom. So I'd ask you to email or fax us here at The Movie Show and share your views on the matter. I intend forwarding the information received to Bob Carr. And this isn't just a matter for New South Wales. It should concern moviegoers all around the nation. David.
Well, you're right about concerning moviegoers across the nation, because the issue here is not just this film. The issue is that the Sydney Film Festival, which is a leading international film festival, as is the Melbourne Film Festival, the Sydney Film Festival has put together a program, and one of the films in it has been banned by the government. I mean, that essentially is what's happened. Now, it's inconceivable that this would happen in an arts event like this, a cultural event, that it would happen in any other country in the world. I mean, can you imagine the Cannes Festival or the Venice Festival?
How long ago is it that a film was banned?
The last time a film was banned at the Sydney Film Festival, 30 or some odd years ago, it was a trigger for reform, because it was such a scandal that it was clear that something had to be done. And it was a coalition government. It was a Liberal National Party government.
That's what we've got now.
That did it. And they carried out the reform that was needed to give the festival the freedom to program without fear of censorship. And that's the way it should be. The festival should be allowed, any arts organisation like that should be allowed to program without fear of government censorship. The fact that this has happened, it's really a scandal.
Well, we hope we have better news for you next week, but it's not looking likely. That's all from us for tonight. Good night.
Good night.